This is Crazy Legs Conti. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. And personally, I listen over a trough of oatmeal every morning, so I'm very excited.
Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. And on this week's show, Kevin, we're going to dress you up in a dress. We're going to have you sing us some songs from Hairspray. We're also going to move on to an equally ungay topic, domestic partnerships, as in Kevin James and Adam Sandler getting hitched up in I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Also, as you heard, we'll be talking to competitive eating celeb Crazy Legs Conti about his DVD Zen and the Art of Competitive Eating. And finally, we will run down our Fat Guys mid-year report with the top 10 movies of 2007 thus far. But that's Kevin, right. Before we get to that,
yes,
here's a couple ways you can contact us.
That's here at right. How do you find us?
You can get us online, obviously, www.fatguysatthemovies.com. You can also catch us at the iTunes store. If you go to iTunes and type in Fat Guys at the Movies, you will find us.
Write a review.
Yes, please write a review. You can also catch us on podcastalley.com, dig.com. If you'd like to email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. And finally, last but not least, if you would like to call us, our voicemail is area code 614-388-8735. Wow.
That was awesome.
That was.
I'm just sitting here watching you. I'm basking in your glory about how well you did this introduction.
Yes. Well, welcome to the magical studio in the sky. This is Fat Guys.
Fat Guys at the Movies. And we're going to start in with this. I know this is going to be politically incorrect to say, but we have a very gay show ahead of us today.
We normally have a pretty gay show. So.
Normally, but... And it's not an offensive thing to say, I hope. But, I mean, we've got Hairspray.
It's the correct vernacular.
Yeah.
It's gay.
Yeah, exactly. That's as Adam Sandler tells us in I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. We will get to that one later because, of course, that's replete with gay issues. But we also have Hairspray is the other big movie that's opening this week, which is stirring up a bit of controversy in the gay community.
Because John Travolta is not really gay?
No, John Travolta is a Scientologist, and Scientology rejects
gay life. Gay people?
Yeah. I don't understand, because they got Tom Cruise on their side for some strange reason.
Yeah, they're in Hollywood. How do they get by with that?
But what I find so odd about this, and this is just like me just saying, this is based on knowledge that I'm like, not only read, I didn't even read on the internet, I heard about somebody reading right. on the internet, so you know it's got to be true. That supposedly Scientology, you know, everyone always wonders exactly what it is, and is it a cult and all that sort of thing, and I've heard the rumors that people have said, well, it's really a front for gay people who are in the closet. Supposedly, that's what I had heard, which I always thought was interesting when this story came out that a lot of gay activists are calling for a boycott of the movie because... It's not that John Travolta plays a gay character. He cross-dresses to play a woman.
Right.
And which was originally played both the first time Hairspray went on screen
mm-hmm.
and in the stage play was played by a gay man as a cross-dresser. But in the right. original show, the original John Waters movie from 88
right.
was Divine, who was a very well-known underground cross-dresser.
Right.
And you know, and they feel that that's trampling on you know the legacy of Divine. And then of course Harvey Fierstein won the Tony for it
mm-hmm.
on Broadway. And he's not necessarily a crossdresser, but he's a gay man, a very outspokenly gay man who kind of made right. the part of the musical.
Well, I guess the only question I have left after all of that is the movie any good?
Well, let's first listen to a clip.
So if every night you're singing as you lie in bed.
You! Go on, get out there and show them.
Wow! Hey, little girl, I'm spinning screen. I don't come cheap when the kisses come free.
And our brand new council member, Miss Tracy Turnblad.
I think no one used the start of a pretty big adventure.
Tracy certainly has redefined our standards.
That's for sure.
That's for sure, Neil.
Yes, redefining standards of the musical comedy.
That's right. And the one thing that bothered me about Hairspray, well, there's two things that bothered me about Hairspray.
John Travolta in a dress.
John Travolta is the most miscast person in the entire
show.
They
didn't even get his gender right.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, I'm a fan of John Waters. I've seen a lot of his movies.
He's fantastic.
Arguably, have you seen any of his films?
I've seen a few, but he is the most fantastic interview ever.
Oh, he's the greatest guy.
That MPAA movie, he was so awesome.
He's brilliant. I met him once when I was in college, and the thing I had to ask him, I said, when you were making Cry Baby with Johnny Depp, I had heard a report that there were girls trying to that he was sick one day and was stuck in his trailer with like intestinal issues, and there were girls trying to buy his sewage. And I asked him that. I said, "Is that true?" And he's like, "Oh, definitely." I told him he should go into
business.
John
Waters was the one trying to sell it.
Yeah, John Waters. That's the kind of guy John Waters is. Ironically, Hairspray was his most wholesome movie he's ever made. Really doesn't have a whole lot of weird stuff in it. And he's known for really weird and extreme stuff. But Hairspray was a cute little movie, like a PG movie you could take your mom to and that sort of thing. And they made a musical out of it. Now, until they make, you know, Pink Flamingos the musical, I don't think you're going to have a true...
That'll never happen.
Yeah, you won't have a true John Waters movie.
Right.
But John Travolta was just the worst casting because he doesn't do a good job. He does this weird sort of Carol Channing impersonation through the whole movie, and it just is not funny. And they don't go for the gusto. Whether you like this or not, his husband in the movie is played by Christopher
Walken.
The man
himself.
They should have had a scene where they kiss, and they had an opportunity for that, and they should have just because it would have been funny.
Right.
You know, but they didn't. They wussed out on that one.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, the movie, it's a cute movie. I mean, you go in and it does preach a little bit to you because it's about integration, racial integration in Baltimore. And it preaches about that sort of thing. But I went in kind of in a bad mood and I left and I was in a great mood. It's one of those pick-me-up movies. A lot of fun, really well done. Especially once you get past the halfway point, it's a cute film. I mean, it's got a lot of heart.
Yeah.
But you didn't see it because you're a homophobe.
What? I think a couple episodes ago, I was gay.
Yeah,
I'm a homophobe.
True. Okay. Well, you know.
All right. Well,
Neil,
Kevin
Carr, right,
not a math whiz.
Whatever.
But official grade?
I say it's it rocked. It rocked.
All right, cool.
I got confused.
Yeah, we're not allowed to say any of these movies suck.
That's right.
That's just the wrong connotation.
Yeah, exactly. You homophobe. All right, well, we got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to review the other gay movie, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are now talking about, after Hairspray, we're talking about a different gender bender type of movie.
Yes,
and that
and
would be...
I know you said you wish that John Travolta would kiss Christopher Walken in Hairspray, but... not a chance, but there is a better chance of Kevin James and Adam Sandler making out in I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
And right? If you notice, this is the second movie that Kevin James has been in.
Where he's tried to make out with a guy?
Yeah, he tries to make out with a guy.
Well, he's moving down the ladder, though. I think Will Smith down to Adam Sandler.
I have to say, I'm a straight man, but, you know, Will Smith, I can...
Yeah.
I could go there a lot quicker than I could go to Adam Sandler, but... You know, Neil, you would stampede that way, but that's just the way it is.
That's how homophobes roll.
That's right.
So
let's take a listen to Chuck and Larry's trailer.
If this marriage is something you've cooked up in response to this pension problem, you are not taking me down with you.
This marriage is the only way I can make sure my kids get my pension if something happens to me.
Your domestic partnership is being challenged by the city.
You guys have nothing to worry about because you're a legitimate gay couple, right?
Oh, yeah, we're big time fruits.
Oh, I like men.
Okay. This investigation is gonna get rough.
How long is Uncle Chuck staying?
What happened to your place?
Are you and Dad homosexuals?
For the record, every time I laughed at one of your jokes, I was faking it.
You're a monster!
You're a monster, Neil.
I may be. And one of the things you heard in that trailer, Kevin, was a lot of the supporting cast.
Yes.
And on the poster, it's just Kevin James and Adam Sandler. But
who cares about those guys?
Seriously. You've got Jessica Biel, need I say more, very hot in the movie.
For a gay movie,
it was
great to have Jessica Biel.
Yes. And Dan Aykroyd. And then all of course, Adam Sandler's good buddies that show up in every single one of his movies. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, Kevin, for me, that made the whole movie. Is those
the supporting cast,
secondary characters, and David Spade shows up, and
as you really don't want to see him,
really should not see him. Nick Swardson also shows up and just lights the screen up. So realistically, I tell you, this is my thought. It takes a little bit of time to get going, but once you really kind of get into the good comedy. Not only are Kevin James and Adam Sandler funny, you can expect that.
Well, they worked, you know? But that's not always the case. You sometimes put, like when Adam Sandler was put with Jack Nicholson, you'd think that'd be comedic gold, but it wasn't.
I thought that was kind of funny, but...
Well, it was okay, but it wasn't...
Right.
They didn't have great
chemistry. They were good enough together on screen, but it's the little moments with, you know, and Steve Buscemi as well. I forgot about Steve Buscemi.
Oh my God, he's hilarious in everything he does.
I laughed so hard. At some of the secondary characters, the supporting characters in this film. But,
well, what I found with the comedy in this one, it's not uncommon with an Adam Sandler movie, with the comedy ones. You know, right. I mean, I didn't laugh at all at Rain Over Me, but you weren't supposed to. Mm-hmm. But with Adam Sandler films, there's stuff in there that's absolutely hilarious, but it's sometimes very rough. There are also gags or jokes that just completely fall flat.
Right.
And they don't know when to drop them, and they overplay them. And that happens quite a bit. Fortunately, most of that happens in the front end of this movie.
Right.
Once you get, you know, really going with the characters and the story, it gets funny, and there are laugh-out-loud moments. It's not the funniest one that he's done,
mm-hmm.
Because it's definitely a very Adam Sandler-ish movie.
Right.
But, it's funny. I had a lot of fun watching it. I had a lot of fun watching Jessica Biel in her underwear, which you see in the trailer.
Yeah.
Ironically,
there's a lot more of that.
There is great, you know, but... There's also stuff in the trailer. If you've seen the trailer, there's a stuff that isn't in the movie.
Right.
They've cut out for whatever reason.
Right.
Like, and I think there was a clip in that clip we heard that was the girl asking, Are you
homosexicals?
Yeah. And that's not in the... I don't think
not
that's
in the
movie.
I was thinking about that. It's definitely not in the movie. Now we've spoiled it for everybody.
Yeah, no. Like, yeah, they're like, oh, I'm not going to see that joke.
Yeah. But it really does. The beginning of the movie, when you go and you sit down, because you really should go see this movie. It's probably one of the...
It's a funny movie.
It's an enjoyable
movie. I wouldn't
movie.
Say it's one of the funniest movies of the year.
It's not one of the funniest movies of the year, but then again, it's got to go up against some really tough competition this year. But it really starts out very sitcom-y.
Like 300 was hilarious.
Yeah, 300 was great. You know, it starts out as, you know, Happy Gilmore meets the King of Queens set in New York with firefighters. But then it moves into, you know, a very funny... And a lot of people are going to complain. It's very... It expounds every single cliche about... You know, homosexual lifestyles that you could possibly...
It's not tender to the community.
It is not tender. You know, don't take your mom to see it if she's not into that or if she can't handle that, because they want to, like, gay up their apartment and stuff like that. And the mailman, it's terrible.
Well, it's interesting. I have a friend who writes for a periodical, just a regular periodical. His editor happens to be a lesbian. And he asked me... how he should approach this, because he's like, he knew she was offended by the movie itself just because it really doesn't treat the subject with kid's gloves, and it comes out as a very potentially offensive film.
Right, homosexuality is the punchline of the movie.
Exactly, throughout the whole film.
Right.
Yeah, and if you watch it, it is very possibly offensive to people in the gay community, but it's not made for the people in the gay community. It's made for a heterosexual audience, and it approaches the issues in a very pro-gay and pro-gay lifestyle attitude. I mean, yeah, it definitely has a positive message.
It doesn't. It's not condescending.
Yeah, but it does have a lot of things that are going to offend people or bother people from that community.
Right.
But ultimately, you have to look at it that way. If that it's going to reach more people than Brokeback Mountain did, because Brokeback Mountain kind of preached to the choir.
Right.
But this one is actually made for the community outside of the gay community, and who knows? I mean, it might offend people. It might offend people in the heterosexual community,
yeah.
too.
My theory is, and I know I said this the other night when we were at the screening, is go find the manliest, burliest, most ungay dude that you know. Take him to see this movie and watch him start to squirm.
They'll
By
squirm
the end of
points.
It, he'll be laughing out loud.
Yeah,
because you forget about all that, and you just lose it, and it's very funny, so... I think definitely worth seeing.
Definitely a good movie. I'm only gonna give it a kind of rocks grading simply because it did fall flat at some points, and it just had some uneven humor. Took a little. It was a little rough off the starting block at points.
I'm gonna go with you painfully with a kind of.
You're gonna agree with me. See, that's why I jumped out first.
I have to agree with you on this one.
You must agree with me. You will bow down before me.
Yeah, not the best comedy we've seen all year, but definitely worth going to see, especially if you're not into musicals. So, yeah. But I'll put
Hairspray above this one, though.
Overall, I think Hairspray sounds like the movie to go see this week if you're...
Hairspray is a cute, really cute film, a wonderful little film. John Travolta is terribly miscast. I mean, they should have put, you know, just a bad decision. They could have put Steven Seagal. Man. That would have been worse.
Yes.
But they should have put Harry Firestein in it. I mean, he would have been great.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I honestly, though, I do think Chuck and Larry is going to win the weekend.
Oh, definitely.
It's got a much broader audience.
Yeah, we look at the theater counts here. We're looking at... nothing at this point. Chuck and Larry over 3,200 theaters. Hairspray at 3,000 theaters.
Very close.
And then nothing else really. So I think you've got a lot out there. You've got Transformers. Still, you've got Harry Potter. You've got.
I think Harry Potter's going to sustain a little bit.
Harry Potter will do okay.
Transformers going to drop
still
off.
Going to do all right. But I think this will finally maybe kill Knocked Up. And
it's the only other sort of crass comedy out there.
So I think Chuck and Larry's going to win the weekend. Hairspray will come in the 2-3 range, probably behind Harry Potter.
Sure.
So
we got to go to a break now, and we will talk to you on the back end.
Flowers lonely, I burn out slowly like a cigarette when you kiss me.
And we're back on the back end. Effect guys at the movies. Actually, the back end is coming up. That's the second half of the show.
That's right. Neil Miller's chomping at the bit because he's gay.
Wow. I went from homophobe to gay in one half of one show. This is fantastic.
That's right.
Can't wait to see what happens next
week. You're in denial. That's what it is.
So second half of the show, we're going to talk to Crazy Legs Conti, my new good friend.
Because you finally watched his movie?
Yeah. His movie was really good, by the way. I don't mean to
spoil. Oh, now you're just pandering. Now you're I love Crazy Legs. He's my best friend. He makes great films.
But we're also going to talk about our top 10 movies of the year so far, and I'm going to fight Kevin over Waitress. And, so that's the second half of the show. Also, make sure that you listen to EatCast,
brand new
episode, just a few days ago. On eatcast.com, that is Kevin talking about competitive eating and me making fun of him for it. And, of course, next week...
You actually talked about competitive eating more because
you have a whole story about
Chipotle
burritos. So make sure you catch that on eatcast.com. And also, next week, I cannot talk about this enough, next Wednesday through Sunday, we are going to be in sunny San Diego for Comic-Con 2007.
Nowhere near the sun. We'll be inside a convention center and movie theaters
the
whole weekend.
Air-conditioned convention center. We're talking to tons of celebrities. We're going to bring you all kinds of interviews, news, hopefully lots of stuff for all the movies that are coming out this year and next year, and maybe some, you know, random shenanigans. So
we'll see.
We'll see. I don't know. Kevin may eat someone.
Actually, we are. I have thrown down the gauntlet.
Yeah,
we talked about this already.
Yes,
I have challenged Uwe Boll to an eating contest.
Yes, and we're waiting on a response.
Waiting on his people to come back to us, which I consider this a positive thing that I didn't get like an email 5 minutes later that says
no,
hell no. The fact that somebody's actually considering this makes me feel
actually
good.
I think what we should do is if he does the eating contest, we'll let him punch Brian in the face.
That's good.
Yeah,
I'm okay for that.
So. Yeah, that Kevin, myself, and fellow Film School Rejects editor Brian Gibson, we will be live. Brian Gibson, our fat guy in the field.
Get punched in the face by Uwe Boll.
So that's
it. I think we got to go to a break. When we come back,
we got to go to a break.
Crazy Lake Conti and the Zen and the Art of Competitive Eating. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We have a special interview, an exclusive interview with Crazy Legs Conti, ranked 11th in the world in competitive eating.
Holy smokes.
He's got a new video coming out, Zen and the Art of Competitive Eating, which traces his career. And I had a chance to talk to him at one of the hot dog qualifiers this summer.
Just give us a brief description of what the movie's about.
The documentary Crazy Legs Conti, Zen and the Art of Competitive Eating, is kind of my journey from fan to gustatory gladiator. Traces the days that I watched, you know, Badlands Booker and Hungry Charles Hardy eat hot dogs on the 4th of July until they took me under their voluminous wings and I was able to compete at the highest levels of gurgitating. So, sort of Rocky or Breaking Away, but with as much food as was consumed in meatballs.
Or thrown in meatballs.
Yes.
What got you interested in competitive eating, and have you done it your whole life?
You know, some people moved to New York to see the Statue of Liberty. I wanted to see fat guys eat hot dogs, and I was just a fan of the sport, attended the Matzo Ball Championship, happened to be in New Orleans when the Super Bowl was there, and I couldn't get in, so I broke the Acme in-house record of 34 dozen oysters in one sitting. I've since gone on to eat 459 oysters on Letterman. That was my strategy, eat a quick 400 and coast. He could only get three down. I've quaffed hot sauce on Emeril and eaten cannolis on The Sopranos, but probably my greatest claim to fame is to celebrate the release of the film at the Tribeca Film Center. I ate my way out of an 8-foot box of popcorn, earning me the moniker the Houdini of Cuisini, and I did live to eat another day. So if you're going to watch the documentary, I recommend it with at least 10 or 12 buckets of popcorn.
Now, you're not a fat guy yourself. Why do you think you are good at eating competitively?
You know, I believe that the secret that is held by Takaru Kobayashi, greatest athlete in the history of sport, is that it's in the mind. You know, your stomach can fill up, but your mind never can. And, you know, big guys are raised on all-you-can-eat buffets, and they think it's all about 12 and 13 servings. But the truth is, if you can focus in on just that one serving, if you can become one with the food, find that Zen center, then you can eat all you can. And it's, your capacity is as limitless as the Grand Coulee Dam.
How long did it take you to find your Zen?
You know, I've been on the circuit for 5 years, and I feel like I'm still working on my Zen. I'm somewhat distracted by the groupies, and I have to be honest, Ohio has been great for me in terms of groupies. The Sheffield Lubin Oil wing-eating contest a few years back was particularly dramatic because I blew my back out on the 100th wing, but I was nestled between two lovely ladies later that night. So I think the truth is, Rich Shea is the first to say it, my celebrity has surpassed my capacity. You know, I'm 11th in the world. I've really got to get back to the table and focus. You know, documentaries and narrative features and all the tangential benefits that come with being a pro athlete are great. But the truth is, I just want to be the best eater that I can. And that requires really discipline and focus that a lot of the rookies are finding. The Joey Jaws Chestnuts and Pat Spacedock Bertolettis of the world.
What are some of the cool things you're going to see in the video?
You know, we really love good DVD packages. Even though I own 800 VHSs, I thought if it's going to come out, it's got to come out well. And Bill Lustig with Blue Underground is an aficionado of a great package. Cannibal Holocaust, you know, Snuff, all great DVDs. This is not exactly in that vein. We filmed it in Tastovision, never before done in the culinary nor cinematic world. What you see me eat on screen, you can eat at home. And we're having screenings with color-coded jelly beans. Take Odorama, Smell-O-Vision, Wonka-Vision, throw it into the mix, and that's Tastovision. Check out Tastovision.com. Leif Garrett, Tara Patrick, all fans of Tastovision.
Is there anything else I missed about the DVD that you want to say and get out to the world?
You know, the DVD extras are a plethora of a buffet. We actually took two Coyote Ugly bartenders, put them in hot dog halter tops and burger bikinis, and have Tim Eater X dunking their buns, because we knew that fat guys at the movies would not accept, you know, Zen and the Art of Competitive Eating without boobs. And the truth was, there were boobs in the early Preakness scene, and they cut it away. The filmmakers decided to do that dreaded go for the PG rating. So this is our unrated DVD release, but we do have girls in hot dog halter tops and burger bikinis just for fat guys at the movies. Not only the most influential voice in film, the only influential voice in film.
Now my question as a fat guy and as a competitive eater is, how did Tim get that gig and why didn't you call me?
You know, the hope is that at the 10-year anniversary, we can sort of escalate that stunt to have the top 50 eaters in the world all dunking the bunettes in perhaps a giant vat of lemonade or whatever alternative beverage becomes in vogue then. So look for that on maybe the 10-year release, is just sort of It's a Wonderful Life meets, I don't really even know because I'm distracted thinking about that scene. But I think people are going to enjoy the DVD because it is a view into a subculture that's hit the cusp of the mainstream. Tennis, golf, all terribly boring sports now. Major League Eating is the future of sport. And Zen and the Art of Competitive Eating is sort of our way of giving back to the world. So check it out and eat all you can.
And never underestimate the power of boobs in a movie, Kevin.
That's right.
So even Crazy Legs Connie understands it.
He understands it. He gets it. And he made sure he put in the Coyote Ugly Bartenders, hot dog halter tops and burger bikinis.
Yeah, and an awesome Fat Guys of the Movies plug.
Absolutely.
I love it.
And we love Crazy Legs. He's awesome. Yeah, and I search forever to find that. It's hidden. It's not like labeled Coyote Ugly's girls or anything like that. So you got to find it in the features.
I'm going to have to take a look. And I really, as I was listening to the interview, was thinking, man, I got to find that on my DVD.
That's right. Well, what did you think of the movie first?
I just watched it not too long ago, but I really liked it in the sense that it has that really great journey feel to it. And the guy is just such an interesting guy. There's parts where he shows some of the different jobs that he takes on living in New York just to pay the rent. And he's just a very interesting dude that and his rise pretty much to the top. I mean, he's not Kobayashi.
He's in the top 20.
But then
again,
if you're in the top 20, that's
a good place to be.
You're making a living off of eating hot dogs, which as gross as I make it sound sometimes, to me, it's very respectable to say that you eat for a living.
So what do you give it?
Oh, I give it a definitely major rocks.
Yeah, definitely rocks on that. And I'll tell you, as somebody who does competitive eating, I find it really fascinating because it shows that sort of, it's that gonzo journalism style of watching this guy rise from a nobody in the sport to pretty high up. And it also shows a snapshot in the past of what competitive eating was in 2002 when Kobayashi was new and before these real young Turks really got on the scene. Yep. And you have these people who are in the finals at Nathan's that you don't see nowadays. So it's definitely a good film.
And this is my quick prediction. Competitive eating is the next poker.
That's right.
It is on TV. Spike, it's going to be on ESPN all the time. Look out. Because poker's big now. Competitive eating is the next big thing. Thanks to people like Crazy Legs County.
You got to go to a break.
And we have returned here on Fat Guys the Movies. And Kevin, we've done homosexuality.
I haven't done it. You have, I guess.
We've
speak for
we've
yourself.
We've done cross-dressing. We've done competitive
eating. Speak for
yourself. Eating.
I do competitive eating. I'll
Let's talk about some movies.
Okay.
Some real normal movies. And our friends at Rotten Tomatoes inspired our top 10 list of the week by doing their mid-year report and the top 10 best, and well, they do the top 25, but I'm only going to read you the top 10.
Well, and they do the top 10 and bottom 10.
And then the bottom 10.
Best or worst reviewed.
Best and worst reviewed movies of the year. And their top 10, you can read them off real quick, is number 1, or I'm sorry, number 10.
Yeah, let's keep the
bottom,
suspense up.
Is The Lookout with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
What?
Number 9 was Waitress, which was a favorite of mine. We'll see if that ends up on Kevin's list.
Yeah, right.
Number 8 was Zodiac, the marathon.
Okay.
That was Zodiac.
The commentary continues.
Number 7 is The Host, which I have a feeling you're going to hear that one again a couple times. Number 6 is Sicko, Michael Moore's latest flick. Number 5, Hot Fuzz. Number 4, Knocked Up. Number 3, Once, a very small but very well received little movie. And number 2 was Away From Her, which Kevin and I both almost fell asleep in, so we don't know how good it really was. And number 1 is Ratatouille, Disney and Pixar's return to prominence with animation. And the worst, this is kind of funny, just as a side.
Here's just zip through the
10 worst. Number 10, Hannibal Rising.
Sucked.
Number 9, Codename the Cleaner.
Sucked.
Number 8, Are We Done Yet?
Sucked.
Number 7, Happily Never After.
Really sucked.
Number 6, Perfect Stranger.
Didn't suck as bad as that, but...
Yeah. Number 5, Norbit, which uber sucked.
Uber sucked.
Number 4 was The Reaping.
really sucked.
Number three was Premonition. Oddly enough, those two movies had almost exactly the same ending. number two was the number 23.
Really sucked.
And the number one worst review movie thus far is Because I Said So.
Very much deserves this.
We have made fun of that movie a lot lately.
The one I think that's funniest about that list, and I think you pointed this out, there are eight movies that got a worse rating than Codename the Cleaner.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Which is sort of like the quintessential crap.
So, on to our lists.
That's right.
The Fat Guys, the movie's official mid-year report.
Dueling lists.
So we're going to run it down back and forth here. We'll start with my number 10, which is a little movie that made kind of a splash early in the year. Probably the best of like the first 60 days of the year.
Okay.
Smokin' Aces. Lots of fun.
That wasn't bad. I wouldn't put it on my killing. Top 10. A lot of killing, a lot of hookers.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotta love that.
Certainly better than Codename the Cleaner.
Yes. I put on my list for number 10, Crazy Love, which I don't think you saw.
I missed that one.
It's this bizarre documentary from Magnolia Pictures about a guy from the, 40s who was infatuated.
This is the 50s, late 50s.
In the 50s, okay. Yeah. And it was the guy in the past who was...
Didn't you see the movie?
Yeah, I saw it, but okay. I was so wrapped up with how insane it was.
Right.
He is infatuated with a woman who's really not all that attractive, and then he, tries to kill her, and, I mean, it's just this
bizarre... They get married, and then he tries to kill her.
He wants her to marry him. I don't want to give anything away in this film, because it's just this bizarre thing. It's a great movie to go to when you think your life's screwed up.
Right.
Go see
or if
this
you think
movie.
Paris Hilton's life.
Yeah, I mean, it makes Paris Hilton look like completely balanced.
Mm-hmm.
All right, number nine.
Number nine is Grindhouse, the full version of Grindhouse. I prefer Planet Terror over Death Proof, but the whole experience of Grindhouse was just awesome. The anticipation, it lived up. It really got the shaft at the box office, but... ultimately, very enjoyable movie.
Good, good. I'll talk more about that later, I'm sure. but I'll go on to my number nine, Fido, which was the zom-com about what it's like after the zombie holocaust and people have made zombies into pets. It's a hilarious movie. Did well at Sundance. Hasn't made a whole lot of money, but it's a niche film.
Yeah.
If you've seen zombie movies.
I think it'll be good on DVD.
Oh, yeah.
Number eight, The Host, which I mentioned on the Rotten Tomatoes list. Just got it on DVD a couple of days ago.
Korean
monster
movie.
Watched it again. It was fantastic. Probably one of the scariest yet most entertaining monster movies I've ever seen in my lifetime.
It was very good.
So
I'll give that to you.
Awesome. Subtitled though.
Yeah. Number eight for me: Live Free or Die Hard.
Really?
I'll have to say at this point in the summer. I have to say that's probably the one I had the most fun at. Of all the big summer blockbusters, I really, really enjoyed Live Free or Die Hard.
It was a lot of fun. And I will say any movie where at the end you're accepting of someone taking out a jet with a semi-truck.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's cool.
That works.
And at no point you're like, wow, that doesn't really work in real life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good movie.
Right on.
On to number seven, probably one of the funniest movies all year, Knocked Up, with Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl, who topped our list last week.
Hottie.
Of the top 10 hotties of summer. So, what more can you say about Knocked Up? It was just
funny
genius.
Funny movie. Number seven for me, and I'm sure Neil hated this film, Hot Fuzz. I put Hot Fuzz on my list, yeah. And I loved it.
We'll see.
I loved Shaun of the Dead, and this was Shaun of the Dead for Buddy Cop films. And I thought it was brilliantly executed and hilarious.
Yes. Inspired by my favorite director ever. That's right, Michael Bay. On to number six, Kevin's favorite movie of the year, I'm sure of it, Waitress with Kerry Russell. Just like Fido, it's a movie that big splash early in the year. It's Sundance, correct? Sundance?
Yeah.
And it didn't... It had a pretty good theatrical run for a very
small
film.
It did well for as small of a movie as it was.
Had a nice little Mother's Day promo. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, such a sweet comedy. And it really, you know, something a little bit different. And Jeremy Sisto still... in that movie is the worst husband ever. So.
Okay. Well, I won't bash your movie in your moment of glory, and I will move on to another heartwarming, lovable movie for my number six, 28 Weeks Later.
Nice.
Another zombie holocaust movie, only this one not as cheery as Fido.
Right.
The sequel to 28 Days Later, which I thought was brilliant by Danny Boyle. Juan Carlos Fresnadillo does a great job with the sequel, and supposedly, the buzz is Danny Boyle's looking out to do 28 Months Later.
Yeah, and I want to say that Juan Carlos Fresnadillo got the Fat Guys of the Movies bump
He did?
When he was on our show.
Rock on, though.
He's way more popular than...
People love him.
Now than he was before on our show.
Exactly.
So
number five.
I stole that from Stephen Colbert. On to number five, the most anticipated movie of the spring for me, 300, Zack Snyder's flick. It was awesome.
That's just your review.
Yeah.
Well, we'll move on to my one with in that zone. A very different movie, but came out about the same time for me. Now my number five, Blades of Glory. I thought one of the funniest movies of the year, and Neil has taken the poster down out of this magical studio in the sky in protest of me putting this on my list, apparently.
Yes. Wow, that's Nostradamus-like.
Ricky Bobby versus Napoleon Dynamite.
Napoleon Dynamite
on ice.
On skates. So, very fun. On to number four, Transformers. It absolutely needed to make the list. Michael Bay's homage to 1980s toys and cartoons.
great story.
No one knows how to blow stuff up like Michael Bay.
I'll give you that.
And you combine that with Steven Spielberg, probably the most amazing and awe-inspiring spectacle of CGI you're going to see in theaters all year.
I'll take a very similar movie. Not as much explosions, I guess.
Okay.
But this is a movie I had a chance to see a little early, but it's not out on wide release. It's Resurrecting the Champ, where Samuel L. Jackson, he plays a down-and-out fighter who's homeless, and they do Josh Hartnett does a piece on him, profiling him. And it's a very fascinating film, great acting by Samuel L. Jackson. Definitely worth seeing.
Sweet. On to number three, a movie that we've talked about a lot on the show, despite it being a very small documentary, Air Guitar Nation.
That's right.
And my now obsession with air guitar.
Sort of disturbing obsession.
Almost disturbing. We went and we met Bjorn Tarok, the star of the film. But I tell you what, the only word I can describe this movie with is energy. This movie has an unbelievable energy from start to finish. You don't think that you're going to like it, and you don't think you're going to be able to take it seriously because it's a bunch of grown men dancing around on stage with no instruments. Mm-hmm. But it is awesome. By the end of the movie, you are sucked into the world of air guitar, and you are ready to rock out.
Rock on. We're at number three. Is this what it is?
Number three.
I'm going to talk about one that was on Neil's list earlier, Grindhouse. And I have to say, if it were split up in the two movies, neither one would make the list. It bombed horribly, but a brilliant film, a great homage to Grindhouse movies. Unfortunately, not enough people know anything about Grindhouse movies and hadn't seen them, haven't experienced stuff on live prints,
right?
Which is why it didn't do well. But it was a great movie, incredibly nostalgic, and a lot of fun.
Yes.
Number two,
which is on the Rotten Tomatoes list, should be on everyone's list at the end of the year, Ratatouille, the animated trip to Paris. Mm-hmm. All I have to say about Ratatouille is it is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very mature and intelligent film. It's not a little kid's movie, but it'll work for anybody. Probably just one of the coolest animated films I've seen since Bugs Life or Toy Story.
Great. I'm going to say for this one, not exactly a kid's movie, Black Snake Moan. Craig Brewer's follow-up to Hustle and Flow. Again, Samuel L. Jackson movie. He does great in it. Christina Ricci is uber hot as the trashy Southern chick. And it's just a fascinating film, very well acted, and a little slice of fantasy for everybody.
Right. And my number one is Hot Fuzz. There's no way that anything's going to knock this off for the rest of the year. By far the funniest, most intelligent...
Better than I think I know who killed me.
Yeah. I cannot describe. I love Shaun of the Dead and I hate zombie movies. I love buddy cop movies. I'm just ecstatic over Hot Fuzz. I cannot wait for the DVD and I cannot wait for Comic-Con because we're going to hopefully meet Edgar Wright and Nick Frost.
And you'll just geek all over him.
Yes, I will. It will not be like the Kevin Smith thing. It will be a mess.
Yeah. So now for my number one movie, the movie that Neil has already bashed on this show just recently, Zodiac. I thought a brilliantly constructed, slowly paced, but very realistically developed and delivered movie. Very very subtle touch from David Fincher, who normally gives a very different type of film.
In my defense, I will not say that I did not like Zodiac. It was just really, really long.
Yeah, that's the point.
So, but anyways, so that's our Fat Guys mid-year report. I think we have to go to break now.
That's right. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies, and yet another show has passed. Yes. I know you're crying and you're in tears. We would come and console you and hold your head on our shoulders and stroke your hair if we could reach you.
Yes.
And to let us know how to do that,
you can catch us online, fatguysatthemovies.com. Also, get us on iTunes, subscribe to us on iTunes, write us a review on iTunes. iTunes. You can also email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or give us a call. What's the number, Kevin?
388-TREK.
614.
614-388-TREK. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sweet. So what are we doing next week?
Next week is Comic-Con.
Oh,
big
my
time. We're going to be out in San Diego. We're going to be talking to celebrities. We're going to get behind the scenes. We're going to be eating lunch. We're going to be eating breakfast shortly before Kevin Bacon shows up.
I wonder if we're going to have sausage.
Well, either sausage or bacon before
I just
Kevin
thought,
Bacon.
Maybe I should buy a plane ticket.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And you might want to book a hotel room.
Oh, wow.
I hear that
I wonder if there's any left.
Up to 100,000 people show up.
Oh, wow. So, hope they have a lot of hotels there.
Huge media event. We should have some really cool interviews, great early gossip, and supposedly they're going to be doing a little teaser for The Dark Knight.
Yes, potentially.
Hold your breath for that one.
So,
we'll be catching, you know, probably The Simpsons right before the Comic-Con starts,
mm-hmm.
and so we can review that, and yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun.
Lots of fun.
Comic-Con's going to be crazy. Keep watching the site. Look at filmschoolrejects.com to see all the updated news and information.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, we'll talk about movies. Not all of these we're going to see. I'll have seen No Reservations, and The Simpsons movie we'll see. Maybe not before we actually release our next show. But then there's a bunch of them that we're going to avoid, like The Plague, like Who's Your Caddy, Skinwalkers, and Lindsay Lohan's stripper who doesn't take her clothes off in I Know Who Killed Me.
Yeah. Who I will predict fairly easily is not going to be as hot as Rose McGowan's stripper who didn't take her clothes off.
Yeah, I also predict that Lindsay Lohan, at least maybe her management, might figure out that her career is completely over.
Right.
Yet, there is news that there is a sex tape of her running around, which you know only emerges when there's worry about the career. So
absolutely.
We'll see what happens. You know, I don't think anyone's going to really care that much. Lindsay
Man.
Lohan, career's over.
Yeah. I'll download it.
I'll still watch it.
Yeah. Anyways, with that, that's our show this week.
So
join
we
us next
completely
week.
Shot our hand on that one.
Thank you for listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Adios.